Meher Baba had his Panch Pyare, five favorite Sikh devotees, and we've restricted this to five. So whichever five show up are the Panch Pyare. How are you?
I'm good. So glad to be here this morning.
8 months.
8 months, yeah. Look at it.
8 turbulent months, or were you?
Okay. I had a job shift.
So, can get the mic for the recording.
So that was the only turbulence.
Was it a forced decision upon you, or you took a conscious decision?
So it was in talks since Jan, and then I think it came to a situation where I had to move. So
right.
Yeah, but luckily, I mean, in that sense, I can say was protected because.
Because people have lost jobs.
Exactly. People have lost jobs, and also, you know, there have been salary cuts and all of that.
Yes.
So in that spirit, to find something itself is it's a blessing in that sense.
True, true. Or let's say for something to have found you.
Exactly. So I'm not questioning what it is. I'm just doing it right now. So that's... And I've kept in touch on YouTube the videos, so in that sense I haven't missed much. But yes, this coming here today after so many months, it's feels good.
Ananda, you remember Ananda?
Yeah.
He says the YouTube, the Zoom flavor is very different from coming. He was here last Sunday.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
He is not too impressed with Zoom. But it's a great vehicle for the teaching to reach out.
Absolutely.
Everything, you know, has its purpose.
True. And I think a lot of people must have also connected with in this time.
Yes. Especially in this time.
Exactly. Exactly. Much needed.
You see, it reminds me of, maybe I mentioned it in an earlier talk, of a friend of mine who, when... demonetization had happened 2 years ago, I think, roughly.
Yeah, correct.
His was a cash-based business, by and large. He was paid in cash. So he got hit. And thereafter, the people who were paying him cash, GST came in.
Correct.
Right? The GST laws. So those people decided to switch to check payment or online transfers, legitimate payments. So he got hit again. Now, I remember my conversation 2 years ago. He said, my business is down by half. And life from thereafter became a living complaint. And criticizing the government, criticizing the same parties he was dealing with earlier, for negotiating harder and so on. Mind you, this is someone who has had a good career run, extremely comfortable in life. But whenever we would meet, which is once in 2-3 months, the complaint would begin that I'm down by half. Now, when the lockdown happened, because his work, he is a kind of celebrity, so his work is to deal with crowds. His business became zero. And he called me up in June or July. He said, now I understand. I should have been grateful that my business was only half 2 years ago. See how relative things are. But thankfully, that realization happened rather than a further complaint that now I'm zero. Thankfully, that realization happened that I was complaining when it was half. Now look where I am. Some people don't realize it. They complain their lives away. And these are the times which are a true test of the teaching. When you know how deep the teaching has gone in. When we face adverse situations, then we know. The acceptance of what is happening, whether we like it or not, doesn't that bring such relief and peace to the situation, no matter how painful?
Definitely. That's right. Yeah, the core of the teaching.
It just takes away this anything for the thinking mind to hold on to.
Yes.
It just doesn't allow that anymore.
Yeah. What a gift.
Exactly. A gift.
It cuts on the clouds.
Correct.
The ego tries desperately to fill the moment with the thinking mind, but it doesn't happen, you see, because things have changed. There was this great, great Nath Yogi, Raja Sundarnath. So he was in deep meditation and some young boys were playing around and they noticed that this yogi was not disturbed by their screaming and shouting. So they took a piece of hot coal, burning coal, and placed it on his thigh. Nothing happened. And then the yogi got up, moved some distance away, and sat down and again resumed his meditation. And it is believed that the boys again went to him and asked him, "How come you didn't react when we put the coal on your thigh? Are you upset with us?" He said, "On the contrary, you helped me to know how deep my experience has been. So I thank you for putting that coal on my thigh." A total acceptance of what happened, of the nature of the boys, of his own nature, and knowing that it was a test of the teaching. Now, this does not mean that at another moment the same thing will happen, because life is spontaneous. Let's say hypothetically the situation repeats itself with Raja Sundarnath. He may flare up, but even that flaring up would just be anger in the moment. There would be no involvement in that of condemnation, hatred, blame, accusation, and so on. We don't know, because life is spontaneous, it is not set in stone. But this is it. This is the true test. When we are tested in life, we know how deep the teaching has gone. What happens when the thinking mind is disengaged is that one is honoring the presence of the presence. One is honoring the presence of the presence. There was a Western mystic called Joel Goldsmith, most beautiful books. So he said in one of his books, love is the answer. Love of God, love of truth, and love of thy neighbor. Not a dualistic love. Love of God, which is love of consciousness. Love of truth, which is love of consciousness. Love of thy neighbor, which is love of consciousness. This is what happens with the teaching. There is a tick mark against each of these three. The only truth is consciousness is all there is. God, which is not a dualistic God set up against the devil, is consciousness, the source. And when one can see that the same consciousness functions through everyone, then one sees that everyone is an instrument of the same consciousness. That is love. Not I love some people, I don't love others. I love people who praise me, who are good to me, I don't love others. Not the selective dualistic love.
Thank you.
that is the same love which when anyone brought special food to Ramana Maharshi, he insisted that it be distributed amongst everyone. That is the love. When there is no sense of differentiation and separation, that these are my closest devotees, so let them have good food.
There's this book.
There's this book which was compiled by Jim Dunn, which was a Q&A on with Nisargadatta Maharaj. So this thing that often came in that book was, you should say, abide in the being, which I sort of didn't understood at that moment. And I was wondering what kind of effort you need to put to do that. These teachings, you know, automatically take you to that place.
I mean,
you don't have to make any effort for it.
Precisely.
So, you know, when you say honoring the presence of presence,
yes,
it's just like a...
It happens.
It happens, yeah. I mean, it just happens. I mean, there's no effort that one has to make for
it. Because actually the effort strengthens the ego. Because the ego feels it can make an effort to be its absence. You see, by abide in one's being, if the ego makes an effort in that sense, it takes it further away from being. This also does not mean effort is not required. Because let's say Maharaj says, just for half an hour in the day, just sit by yourself and witness the thoughts which arise, meditate. That is so-called effort. Just to give that space for this inner reflection to start happening. But by itself, the ego gets frustrated because it realizes the more effort it puts in to abide in the being, it's getting more engaged in the effort. But the beauty of the teaching is that when there's no one to blame, or when you accept the events that happen in your life, the end of the thinking mind is what happens effortlessly. That is the beauty. More so now, I get emails saying that 2020 has been such an unpredictable year that we don't know what's in store in 2021. Nobody knows. The fact is, we never knew ever. It is just that an incident happened on such a collective scale that there was collective suffering, you see. That is the difference. It gave us an opportunity to see how united we are in our suffering. We have always been united in our suffering. Everyone's life is a life of ups and downs, pleasures and pains, not knowing what will be there tomorrow. Every human being's experience is that. Everyone is going through their trials and tribulations. Nobody can have a life of only pleasure. It may appear that way sometimes. Sometimes when people see affluent people, for example, and say, oh, his life is so comfortable, so smooth, so good. How do you know? That is an appearance. That is an illusion within the illusion. You don't know what, who is going through. But nobody's life is designed for only pleasure. It's like everyone thinks the circus clown who makes everyone laugh must be so happy. And it is proved that they have deep sadness. Studies have been done. Deep sadness within is what brings this out to make other people happy. Nothing is what it seems. Now, what is that presence? If you were sitting here, which you were, before I walked in, and I walked in, the attention shifts from being, presence, to an object in presence. And when I walk out, the attention will shift from the object to being. So the presence has not come and gone. The objects appearing in presence come and go. If you leave the room, the presence has not left the room. You have left the room as an object. And if we understand this, that it is not just human objects, but objects of every conceivable kind. A situation at work is an object. You're thinking about it. After 5 minutes, you're not thinking about it. Objects in consciousness could be physical, could be mental. But one realizes everything comes and goes. Various thoughts come. My friend said this to me. Comes and goes. An issue at work comes and goes. All these objects start getting witnessed. Witnessing starts happening in life. This is the first time you have come. What's your name?
Swani.
Amina. That's a unique name.
Yeah.
Not heard it before.
Yeah, it comes from the name Om.
Oh,
and
wow.
It Om means auspicious.
Oh, how nice. We are blessed. All of us are blessed.
I'm blessed to be here. For a long time, I was waiting to kind of attend a session of yours. I'm basically from New Delhi and I've come here to Mumbai.
Okay.
But in all this COVID time, I wasn't really getting a chance to kind of come here and attend one of your talks.
So what are you doing in Bombay?
I've recently moved to Bombay.
Okay. In the lockdown time?
Just 2 months before.
Okay.
Prior to this, I used to come to Bombay on and off, but basically I've gone and brought up in Delhi, New Delhi.
Okay. So now, did you come to the Delhi talks which I gave?
No, at that point of time, I wasn't, you know, familiar with you.
Okay.
In the recent times, I've started, you know, seeing your videos, and I was quite inspired by your talks, especially, you know, when I'm dealing in situations in life that are problematic. I've seen some of your videos where you've said, like, you know, that whatever is destined to happen will happen in life, and whatever is not destined to happen will not happen. I try to, you know, take that teaching in, you know, whenever I'm in a situation, because constantly worrying about a thing or thinking
sure.
about it just makes you go haywire. You know, it makes you go crazy. So every night I used to tell this to myself, you know, whatever is destined to happen will happen. So why to bother about it if it's not meant to happen, not meant. Sometimes you do not like certain things to be happening in your life, but still you have to accept it. So I do that. But then the morning I woke up, I see that, you know, that teaching is at one side. I have taken, you know, and the problem is at other side, it's still there. And again, the mind would start thinking about it.
Yes.
So, am I finding a solution or not?
Yes. So, you see, two things happen. One is, something has appealed to you by this line that whatever's destined to happen will happen.
Yeah, it gave me...
Something has appealed. Otherwise, it would not have even struck you. You would have said, no, I don't agree with this. Finished. Right?
Yes. All that thing that was going
yes.
on my mind had stopped.
Yes.
It stopped. It
yes.
took a break. Fine. I was not worrying anymore. It just took a break.
Yes. Now, there are two things here. One is the actual worrying, which is also based on one's prior conditioning. We have been conditioned to worry. Fear of the future. What will happen to me?
Yeah.
That takes time to transform. One day you hear something which appeals to you, that, you know, I'm fed up of this dialogue, and this line appeals to me. Whatever's meant to happen will happen. Right? What is that? Amina has received fresh conditioning, which has kind of said, wow, this is another way to look at things. But the old conditioning is still on autopilot, you see. It takes time to start seeing life a different way, one. The other thing is that it is the nature of the mind to worry. Now, this is also seen that I accept this line, this sentence, I understand it, but it's so hard to implement it. Why? Because the nature of the thinking mind is to worry about an imaginary future. Because without that worry, where is the thinking mind? If that worry is pulled out from your mind, there is nothing to think about the imaginary future. So that is the nature of the mind. So even when the worry arises and you ask yourself, what is this? I'm seeing that whatever is destined to happen will happen, yet I'm worrying. The understanding kicks in that that is the nature of the mind. And even that is witnessed. You're not fighting that in. You're just seeing that all these old thoughts are coming back, these patterns, despite now feeling deep down that yes, what's destined to happen will happen and what's not will not. So even that is witnessed. And with that simple awareness, not questioning, oh, why is this happening? Why am I worrying again and again when I accept this? Not fighting it. Saying, I know now this is the nature of things, the nature of my mind. That witnessing creates the gap. Then when the worry arises, it is witnessed. It is not given fuel. It is not sustained by constant worrying, because now the awareness is there that this is the nature of the thinking mind. So you've taken a step back. So this is a process where the teaching sinks in deeper and deeper and deeper. That is what happens. But you see, the good news is that the arrow has already hit home at the start. Otherwise, you would not have been drawn to this teaching. So one has to trust that that force which made me hear something, which appealed to me, let me put my trust in that force. Let me surrender to it and see what happens. Was it a conscious choice that you saw a video?
Basically, I'm a firm believer in Sai Baba, and that made me saw your videos on Nikhil Kripalani, or a lot of videos.
But you saw it.
Yeah.
And out of millions upon millions of videos, you saw one video, two videos, three videos.
Okay. Now there's a lot of them.
Lot of videos, but not millions of videos. You see, it appears we are choosing. It appears we have chosen to watch a particular video. But first of all, YouTube had to be there in the first place. Was that your choice? No. I had to be there. Was that your choice? You had to be there. Was that your choice? You see how it works. What appears to be choice is when it is seen in the light of clarity that so many events transpired for me to come across something, hear something, see something, then one feels quite insignificant. That out of so many videos, this one came to me. I watched it. I could have skipped it. I heard something which appealed to me. You see, that is the compassion of the source. It presents itself to you.
And also, I want to ask you, is there anything as we call grace? Does grace exist?
Yes. Grace is already operating.
It was like when I said I was, taken by this teaching. So I was accepting life as it was coming. I wasn't expecting a miracle happening in my life or any grace on myself. But I was just accepting the teaching and accepting life the way it unfolds.
That is the grace. That itself is the grace.
Yeah.
Many people don't have that. Accepting life as it unfolds is the grace. It's nothing special in that sense. You mentioned Sai Baba. If you accept that what happens in your life is Sai Baba's will, that is grace. It is not you accepting what happens, it is Sai Baba's will. It is the grace operating through you that makes you accept that there is a higher power, there is a divine force which is looking after things the way it knows best. That is the grace. And the more one rests in this acceptance, the more the grace flows. Because as Ramana Maharshi said, it is not that you put in effort and the grace will be a result later. It is simultaneous. It happens together. It is not a cause-effect relationship. For example, if you live your life accepting that whatever happens is Baba's will, God's will, the grace is immediately there. If you accept that a friend of yours upset you today by saying something or doing something, let's say turning up late for your meeting, if you accept it happened because it was meant to happen, I don't know where she got stuck, what she was doing, or whatever reason she came late, I accept it. Does it mean that I get walked all over? Certainly not. I tell her that, look, it's okay once, but if you're going to show up late each time, it's not going to work. Simple. But do you hold her responsible? Do you hold her accountable? Do you say, you made me wait? How dare you? Then one has not accepted that she was late because she was meant to be late. The hows and whys and wheres is a different thing. So when we live our lives this way, accepting situations as they arise, we may take the required steps, but the total acceptance is there that this is the divine will. That is the grace. Grace does not mean only good things happen to me. Many people have that expectation that, oh, I have the grace of this master, this guru, nothing bad will happen to me. That means you are still mired in duality, good and bad. That is not grace. Grace is to see that all polaric opposites are the dance of duality. There is nothing outside God. That is grace. Now, let's say he loses a job. Let's say. That doesn't mean, oh, now there's no grace of God, otherwise I wouldn't have lost my job. This means, if one loses the job, one accepts that I did my best, yet the job went out of my hands. That acceptance is the grace. Not judging the situation as good or bad. Seeing what unfolds. Will I get another job? Won't I get another job? All I can do is try my best. The results are not in my control. That is the grace. Worry may arise. It's natural. In a difficult environment, the worry might be there. But even that is witnessed. But deep down, when this teaching has hit home, that whatever happens is God's will. The peace which it brings, the peace to the situation. Pain may be there, but that peace deep down, where one is no longer fighting with gloves on, that peace is the ultimate grace. And when one has that grace early in life, at a young age compared to an older age, it can really see one through life's ups and downs. So do you stay far from here? Which part of Mumbai? Oh, that's quite far. Must have taken you about an hour or so?
About an hour and a half.
Hour and a half. But being Sunday, it's easy.
A lot of times you try to you lose your faith on whoever you think, from wherever you think the grace is coming upon God, or whoever you're worshipping. A lot of times you try to lose your faith upon it in times of tests or tribulations, whatever you say, or really in problematic situations.
Yes.
I don't know what to do with him, at that point of time.
So which is that faith which will be unshakable? That is the faith my teacher gave me, and his teacher gave him, and his teacher gave him. Which is, like you started by saying, whatever is destined to happen will happen. So we could not go running to our teacher and say, oh, this happened. I tried it once or twice when I went to him. Some situations at work would arise and I thought he'd sort it out. And I went and I gave him the whole scenario of a client who was being so difficult and giving a hard time, another one who wasn't paying our bills. And all he would do was he'd smile and say, we'll see what happens. So I gave up. I said, there's no point running to him with what he called problems in phenomenality. All these small things in this phenomenality, this world of this happened to me, that happened to me. So the default setting became, whatever happens is God's will. Now if one lives this, isn't this the greatest faith? Rather than, oh, something good must happen to me. I deserve it. Nothing bad should happen to me. Is that faith, unshakable faith, can it ever be unshakable faith? When that stops happening, this self-righteousness that only good things should happen to me, that is the establishment of true faith that I don't know. There is certainly a higher power which is more intelligent than my puny intellect. And I accept. I can't make sense of everything. I truly accept. This is life. Life and living. Someone I met said, who's a devotee of Shirdi Sai Baba, that Sai Baba would come to her in dreams many times. And then what happened? The ego started feeling special. Sai Baba comes to me in my dreams. And I used to get this happened in the dream, that happened in the dream, on the email. Then the dream stopped. My faith in Sai Baba has gone. He no longer appears to me in my dreams. So I said, that means if he starts appearing again, your faith will be restored. She said, yes. You see how centered the me is? Sai Baba appeared to me. I'm special. And then the dream stopped. He didn't appear to me. I have no faith in him. He didn't appear to me. So I have no faith in him. So I said to her, Sai Baba appeared to me in a dream and said, don't believe anyone who says Sai Baba appeared to them in a dream. Sai Baba appeared to me in a dream and said, don't believe anyone who says Sai Baba appeared to me in their dreams. She got more upset. Because she said, oh, that means you don't believe me. I said, no, you missed the point. I said, don't believe me also, because he appeared to me in my dream and said, don't believe anyone who says Sai Baba appears in my dream. Why did I say this? See how the ego is? How dare you tell me that? Completely missing the point that my dream is as irrelevant as your dream. You get it? But this is how the ego works. How dare you say this? It has missed this whole point that was being made. It is so strongly centered. Poor Sai Baba. Imagine if your faith depends on whether he appears in your dream or not. Is that the kind of faith he's looking for? You have abandoned me. How is it possible? How can such a divine representation of consciousness ever be absent? It is the fluctuating me and mine, you see, which plays this game. That is what happens.
There are often times
try to stay rooted to the teachings, but sometimes, you know, in this daily interactions with people, while you're trying to stay rooted, you slip into this ego mode, because you know the other person is so hardened and not letting go of whatever their view of the situation or, and you know, you sort of end of the day come and reevaluate, you know, perhaps should have been handled or whatever, should you have acted in a different way on your part. How does one sort of look upon those situations?
But that is absolutely fine. That is absolutely fine. Because, like I just said, you see, it is a learning, it is a process.
Yeah.
You know, we are not judging our own reactions. We have been built a certain way. We have been conditioned a certain way. Sometimes that certain pain points get pressed.
Yeah.
Certain issues get triggered. We are human. So this re-evaluation at the end of the day is actually what my teacher called personal investigation. That at the end of the day, just sit back and think about what happened, who said what. And then ask yourself, is it truly their action? It appears as it is their action, but when I look back and say, you know, this person said this because the way they are, re-evaluation, because in the moment you're operating on your conditioning.
Correct.
This sitting back is what creates the gap, the space to witness what transpired in the day. So this then starts becoming more and more your natural state. Because you don't have to go through this process again and again and again. The involvement gets cut off faster and faster and faster. That is when the teaching is sinking. So it is actually a very natural process to reevaluate and ask yourself. And so what could happen? Regret may arise that, oh, I said something I shouldn't have. Now when I look back, certain words came from my mouth in the afternoon when I spoke to someone, and maybe actually it was just unnecessary. Now when you look at that, the next morning you may go and tell the person, you may apologize that, look, I'm really sorry if my words hurt you. I didn't mean it. So what has happened is, now you accept that even your reaction was meant to happen. You didn't control it. You're surprised you said something. But you accept. You don't beat yourself up. Why did I say that? I should not have said that. This means the teaching has not sunk in. And that whole dialogue does not start again. You accept that, oh my God, when I see things in this light, it's clear that I said something which perhaps would be offensive, and I've seen it, so let me go and apologize. So you are so open to this understanding and seeing people in a different light that the next morning you go and say sorry. So regret may arise, but you won't feel guilt, because you know that even your pain point was triggered based on your conditioning, which you didn't create. So it is a very natural process, what you have said just now. The re-evaluation is a good word. It's nice because it shows one is introspecting, looking at things. You know. Otherwise, so much of our life goes in unawareness, keeping on getting triggered and triggered and triggered and triggered. What is the time? I can't see the clock.